Today, I'm welcoming back Dr. Scott Borma, Director of Bands at Western Michigan University. Our last chat was in November. Have you been busy?
Oh, we're always busy over there. Dalton Center is always bustling.
Well, let's talk about this concert for Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium, free to all, as usual. What are some of the things that you thought would be interesting for them to play and for us to hear?
Yeah, well, every time we program a concert, I tend to start with what's going to be our kind of centerpiece work. And for this concert, I wanted to feature Florence Schmidt's Dionysiacs. And it's a very well-known band work. It's one of the first works written for band, for our present concert band kind of organization, and it was written back in just around the turn of the century in I believe 1913, 1914, and it's a staple in our repertoire, and it's also one of those pieces that is feared and loved by conductors of wind ensembles, because it's one of the more challenging pieces that's ever been written for the ensemble, considering it was one of the first ones written for the ensemble. But I decided to tackle that for this concert and really expose our students to that music, because it's from a different era than a lot of the band music that we tend to play. We tend to play a lot more recent works and turn of this century as opposed to turn of that century. And so I thought this would be a great centerpiece for the program. And so then going from there, try to decide what kind of things can we fill in to complement that with varied styles and different eras and who we're going to feature, and kind of came up with the program from there.
Any personal friends represented on the program who write music today?
Absolutely. Well, now, I wouldn't say a personal friend, but Jennifer Higdon is a person that's become very, very into writing for winds, as well as all the other kinds of ensembles she writes for. She happens to be a Pulitzer Prize winning composer, and us band guys are always looking for those big time composers to write for our idiom. And we were fortunate enough to get her to write an oboe concerto. But the thing that led us to that is we have our new oboe professor at Western, Dr. Nora Lewis, and wanted to certainly feature her. She's a fabulous musician and an equally great person, and just thought that it would be great to have her collaborate with us on a piece. And she and I both gravitated to this piece. It's been getting a lot of good play and a lot of attention. And so it's Jennifer Higdon's oboe concerto.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Jennifer Higdon herself is a flutist, I think.
Yeah, supposedly self-taught. And she kind of started at a late stage. She taught herself how to play the flute when she was about 15 or so. She didn't really get any formal training until late into high school or early college, and then started composing, I think, at 21. And that's old for composers. They tend to start really young and make it a real part of their lives. But she started late, but she seems to be doing okay for herself.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, that she wasn't, fully, immersed in music by the time she was 10
right.
or 12.
Yeah.
That's really great. So Jennifer's represented, Jennifer Higdon, Florence Schmidt. Who else?
We have, everybody knows John Philip Sousa, so we're going to start out our concert with a great Sousa march. There's so many wonderful Sousa marches, but this is a very unique march for John Philip Sousa. It's called Easter Monday on the White House Lawn, and it doesn't get played as much as I'd like it to get played. It's just a delightful piece, and it's kind of ragtime. It's a really fun march, and it's going to be conducted by a second-year master's conducting student, Laura Zilhaver.
Well, I have a recording here from the President's Own United States Marine Band. Here's John Philip Sousa's Easter Monday on the White House Lawn. And that's a march by John Philip Sousa, one we don't hear very often. It's called Easter Monday on the White House Lawn. I can hear the little bunnies hopping along.
Yeah, absolutely.
My guest is Scott Borma, director of bands at Western Michigan University. And Dr. Borma will be conducting the University Symphonic Band in a free concert on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Coming up in music, we'll be talking about Jennifer Higdon, David Maslanka, and Florence Schmidt. First of all, the size of the band again?
It's about 65 students. A lot of different colors.
Is it mostly upperclassmen?
This ensemble, yes. This is the considered our top concert band on campus, and so all of the bands are by audition. And so this is the cream of the crop. We have a number of graduate students as well as mostly seniors and juniors, but there's some sophomores, and every once in a while a freshman sneaks into the mix. And so everybody's welcome, but you got to be able to know how to play your instrument to be in this band.
Percentage off the top of your head, if you know, are performance majors versus education or music therapy? Or...
You always get me with one question that I don't have the exact answer to, so I'm going to guess. Certainly there are quite a few music education majors in the ensemble, but there are quite a few performance majors as well. It's probably, I'm going to guess, maybe a third performance majors and two-thirds music ed majors. We also have music therapy majors involved, and we also get students that are dabbling with other kinds of musical composition majors and other creative outlets in various different parts of our university. They sometimes end up in the band and just like to keep playing their instruments.
Sure. I know there's just a lot of great talent there, but they're also busy with many other things.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and I wish they would focus all of their energies on practicing their band music, but unfortunately, or fortunately, they have.
So do their teachers.
Yes,
so
that's
do their
right.
private instructors.
We all want their time and energy, but they are spread pretty thin. They fortunately have so many wonderful opportunities to perform and create in the school.
What are some of your secrets to shepherding a group of musicians to their finest performance on a given date?
Yeah, that's hard. The trajectory to get it to culminate just perfectly at that one spectacular moment. Sometimes that happens at the dress rehearsal. Sometimes that happens the week before a performance.
No, I know you can do it.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
You have done it many times.
Well, it's a challenge, you know. One of our perennial complaints as conductors is, why do they wait to the last minute to figure this out, you know? But kind of in a way, thank heavens they do, because they tend to bring it all together and the light bulbs start clicking that final week before. And then by the time we get on the stage, one of the things I always say to the ensemble, okay, guys, there's nothing more we can do. We've talked about everything. We've played every phrase. We've tried to correct every possible misstep. We've shaped every phrase. We've balanced every note. We've tuned everything. Now it's just time to have fun and enjoy expressing this music, because ultimately what it's about is captivating an audience and bringing them into our musical world. And hopefully by that time they're comfortable enough with the technique and the difficulty that they can just let it loose and have a good time. And that's just kind of how we try to approach it.
Well, let's talk a little more about the Oboe Concerto of Jennifer Higdon. We talked about her a little bit earlier, saying she came to composition late, but has just taken the world by storm since.
Yeah.
A Pulitzer Prize winner for composition.
She won a Grammy for Best Contemporary Classical Composition in 2010 for her percussion concerto. So she's really getting international attention as one of the great composers of our day.
Is she also a teacher somewhere?
She is teaches at the Curtis Institute of Music.
Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So this Oboe Concerto was published or written in 2008. It's nearly 10 years old now.
Right.
What was your first introduction to the piece?
Well, it was written originally, the score was written for orchestra, so it was written for a typical orchestra. And then the next year, three universities got together as a consortium and commissioned her to write the band version, which is the same piece, just different instrumentation. And the University of Michigan, the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and the Hart School got together and decided to ask her to do this. And fortunately, she was willing to do it herself. Sometimes you'll have another arranger or transcriber do that, but it was great that she took this on herself. myself and did the band version of it, which we'll be performing. And I was introduced to it. I happened to be a professor of music at the University of Michigan at the time. So I was there as the associate director of bands and the director of the Michigan Marching Band. And so I was asked to be by my colleague, Michael Hathcock, the director of bands. I was asked to be the recording producer of when we recorded this piece with the oboe professor at Michigan. So through many, many hours of listening to every phrase and trying to get it just perfectly right to get the perfect recording, I got to know the piece quite well.
You really must know it inside and out. Mm-hmm. And you have as a soloist Nora Lewis,
yes,
the new professor of oboe.
Right.
At Western Michigan
We're
University.
Just so thrilled to have her here. You know, every time you are a part of I happen to be externally involved in hiring and choosing, and fortunately she said yes, because she was just absolutely the top of the heap, and she's turned out to be just such an incredible inspiration for our oboe students. It's just really made a massive impact on their direction and all the opportunities that they have. And in addition to her just fabulous teaching, she's a marvelous player, and like I said earlier, most importantly, just a great person. She's just a fantastic colleague. She's immersed herself in our school. She's everywhere you turn, she's got her fingers in it, and we're just very excited to feature her and her talents on Sunday.
Will this be her first opportunity to perform this as a soloist?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer. I know she knew the piece very well, so I think she performed it at her previous institution. So, yeah, we were both familiar with it, and like I said, when we were first talking about what should we do together, what piece would be great, and she mentioned it about the same time I did, and so it just kind of seemed like the right thing to do.
Jennifer Higdon's music is tonal.
Mm-hmm.
It's colorful.
Very colorful. I think that's a perfect description.
Just a lot of dynamics, and it seems to tell a story in a lot of ways. What's your take?
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating because it's, as a composer myself, in studying a score, there's so many choices she makes that go in different places that always kind of make me question, you know, I wonder why she made that decision, because that's not something that would seem normal to me, yet it sounds beautiful. So, you know, well, she's a greater composer than I am, so that's part of it. But, you know, she makes really unique decisions about how to combine sounds and colors that I just don't hear in other pieces. When I hear something by Jennifer Higdon, I've gotten to know her music enough that I'm, oh, wow, that's Jennifer Higdon. You can just tell. Mm-hmm. And she goes through passages of kind of this disjunctness. You'll have one instrument to play, peep-a-pop, peep-a-pop. And there will be another people, boo-doo-dee, boo-doo-dee, peep, beep-a-bop, you know, and then she keeps adding different voices to, so you get this cacophony of these little snippets of sound that create this really interesting palette of colors. And it's really creative and very engaging.
I have heard a touch of what I might call Americana
in
sure. her music.
Yeah, I can see that.
Sort of a folk sense or an optimism. Well, why don't we take an excerpt from the Higdon Concerto? You'll have to be in the crowd on Sunday to hear the full performance. Where should we begin?
I think we'll take off somewhere in the middle and kind of hear the ending of it.
Thank you.
We've heard part of the Oboe Concerto by American composer Jennifer Higdon, which will be featured on Sunday by the University Symphonic Band, led by my guest, Dr. Scott Borma. And the soloist for the work is the new professor of oboe at Western Michigan University, Nora Lewis. This is going to be an exciting moment to bring all of that together. Jennifer Higdon's Oboe Concerto. Well, let's move on and hear about the piece that follows.
Yeah, then we're going to go into David Maslanka's Traveler. And David Maslanka has become known as one of the, not coming up with the right words, but he has written a lot of really terrific band music. And so he's kind of a staple in our repertoire. He's written several symphonies, I think 8 symphonies for band, and all kinds of other band compositions. And very interesting person. I met David Maslanka for the first time when he was our guest composer here at Western for our annual spring conference on wind and percussion music. And this is back when I was a high school band director back in the 80s. And I remember coming and sitting in the Dalton Center lecture hall, and he had an hour where he was just talking to band directors and talking about the compositional process. And none of us really knew him. Well, none of us knew him. And he started talking, and I'll never forget, he started talking about, he sat there and he kind of stared at us, and then he closed his eyes, and it seems like it was 5 minutes before he said anything. We're all kind of looking at each other like, what's going on? And then when he started to talk, he started to talk about blood and some kind of morbid ideas. And again, we're all going, what is going on here? And just really deep, kind of dreadful, sad, sorrowful thoughts. And then as he talked, he started talking more hopeful and more inspiring. I still to this day don't really know what he was talking about, but I was highly affected by how profound his head must be. There must be a lot of really deep thoughts going on in there, and his music really reflects that. There's great joy in his music. You'll often hear hymns, well-known hymns that show up. You'll often hear this kind of triumphant Renaissance-esque kinds of fanfarish music, but then all of a sudden he'll go into this almost Zen place where these droning piano chords and this gorgeous oboe solo and a soprano sax and a flute that really kind of take you to a peaceful place sometimes. It's fascinating music, and this piece is exactly what I'm talking about. It starts with some very joyful, like I said, Renaissance-esque type fanfarish ideas, and gets quite complex and pretty gritty in the middle, and then it goes to that Zen place, and it just feels good. It's just really captivating music.
This piece was first premiered in 2003. I'd like to know if you can give me a sense of what generation David Maslanka is from. Like, did he study with people like Carol Husa, or is he more of a newer generation?
Well, he was born in Massachusetts in 1943, and he attended Oberlin, and he studied composition there with Joseph Wood. He spent some time in Salzburg, Austria at the Mozarteum, and then he did his master's and doctoral study at Michigan State University, and he studied with H. Owen Reed. And H. Owen Reed is very famous band composer. One of his most famous pieces, La Fiesta Mexicana, gets played all over the world constantly for years and years. And so I think that's what kind of turned him in the direction of writing a lot of band wind ensemble music. He lives in Montana, just out in the middle of nowhere, just kind of communing with nature, and he just lives full-time writing music and still writes. We actually are part of a consortium. The Mid-American Conference Band Directors Association just commissioned him to write a new piano concerto for band and piano, and we'll be performing that here probably next year. And so he's still very active, writing a lot of really intriguing music.
And he's been around and seen a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. In his... He's we see him at conferences, so he's very supportive of all the band conferences, and This particular piece was commissioned by the University of Texas at Arlington, their alumni association, and it was to honor the career contributions of Ray Lichtenwalter, who retired as director of bands there at UTA. And he was a close friend of Meslanka's and a champion of his music for a lot of years. And let me read a little bit from his program notes. It's just interesting what the idea behind the piece came from the feeling of a big life movement as his friend is about to retire. And the piece Traveler begins with an assertive statement of the Bach chorale melody Nicht so traurig, nicht so sehr, which in better pronunciation is not so sad, not so much. The chorale was not chosen for its title, although in retrospect it seems quite appropriate. The last part of life need not be sad. It is the accumulation of all that has gone before, and a powerful projection into the future, the potential for a tremendous gift of life and joy. And so the music begins with energy and movement, depicting an enraged life in full stride, and at the halfway point, a meditative quiet settles in. Life's battles are largely done. The soul is preparing for its next big step.
Well, let's hear the opening of Traveler by David Maslenka. We've just heard Traveler, a 2003 composition by the noted band composer David Maslenka, and that work will be performed on Sunday by the University Symphonic Band. Here in the studio, Dr. Scott Borma is with me to talk about this program featuring an assortment of various pieces, as always, diverse and filled with lots of wind color. And we might have saved one of the best pieces for last, because it's, as you were saying earlier, it seems to be one of those groundbreaking pieces that kind of put wind band music on the map.
Right. At a time when bands were, you know, there were professional bands, the Goldman Band, and, you know, it was the golden age of bands in America, and bands
Sousa
would travel.
Sousa had his band at
right.
this time, right?
Yep. And they would travel the country, and people, it was just a very popular thing to go to band concerts at the time. And so, you know, at the very same time Sousa was writing Easter Monday on the White House Lawn, which we open our concert with on Sunday, it's the exact same time that this French composer, Florence Schmidt, wrote Dionysiacs. And it's about the Greek god of, is it wine, Dionysus?
Theater, drama.
Yeah, drama. Yeah, so pretty.
And wine,
yeah. I know there was wine involved. But this, Florent Schmidt was a French composer, and actually a very, very popular French composer. He was one of the most famous French composers of the time. I mean, at the time he hung out with Stravinsky, and I know Stravinsky's Russian, but he was in France at the time, mm-hmm. and they hung out together, and actually Stravinsky was noted as being jealous of Florence Schmidt's fame and success. You know, now we never hear of Florence Schmidt, we hear of Stravinsky all the time. So it's interesting how history either remembers or forgets. But significant composer of the first half of the 20th century, and he wrote his whole life until he was in his 80s, and he became the subject of some attacks. He was a little bit too pro-German in the 1930s, so there was a little controversy with his life. But he, you know, at a time when a lot of composers were, and this might be the reason why he's not as remembered, is that at a time when composers were really experimenting with really out there music, serialism, Schoenberg, and 12-tone music, and Stravinsky with his primal rhythms, and Schmidt was continuing to write in a very impressionistic style. He owed a lot of his influence to Debussy and the impressionist composers. You can hear Wagner in there and Richard Strauss as well, so there's romantic elements to his writing at a time when romanticism was kind of becoming passé. And so this piece is a largely romantic, wildly impressionistic piece, and one of the hardest things I've ever conducted in my entire life, and truly one of the hardest things our students have ever played. And so it's been a joy of a process to get them where they are together, and to see just how far they can go, because there's some pretty terrifically, technically challenging aspects of the piece. The ending of the work, which we'll play in a little while, is fantastically thrilling, but only because it's so, I mean, it's wonderful music, but it takes such incredible technique to pull it off. And there are a lot of times in the pieces where it's very... It never stays the same tempo for more than a few seconds. So it's constantly just changing a little bit, boom, beam, boom, beam, boom, beam, boom, you know, those kinds of things. And to get an ensemble, you have 14 players going boom, beam, boom, beam, boom, beam, boom, beam, boom, together is really challenging.
Yeah.
But really beautiful when it happens.
This is reminding me of how I listened to a work like La Mer,
yeah,
by Debussy, and I don't know how the orchestra's quite doing it.
Right.
They just somehow play the notes together, but it's like washing back and forth.
It's almost like they purposely write rhythms that are so abnormal that they don't want the listener to understand them. They just want it to be felt and experienced.
Yes,
the impression that
yes.
they give. It's impressionistic.
Most music before this time, you can actually guess the time signature.
Oh, yeah.
You can picture the bar lines.
Right.
It's not
that.
It's,
yeah.
And after this era, I have a lot of much more difficulty.
And the real joy, the reason that the piece is still so accessible is because he then he'll go into and then he'll go into these passages that are, okay, now I'm getting it, now I'm grooving with it, and all of a sudden you'll go, you know, so it's just, it takes you through a whirlwind of different kinds of style, or different kinds of moods, and the ambiance of it all is really captivating.
Music of Florence Schmidt, who is one who deserves to be heard as one of the innovators of his time, along with, you know, your Stravinsky's and your Debussy's. And I picture these composers at this era being influenced by world music, exoticism. Mm-hmm. They're taking a lot of flavors from a lot of places.
You're right.
I'm not actually familiar with the piece, Dionysiac.
I was introduced to it as a trombone player in the Western Michigan University Symphonic Band under my conductor at the time. Back at this, it would have been 1984 or so, and Richard Suddendorf was the director of bands at the time and introduced me to it, and I've just loved it ever since.
That's what closes the concert on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. Again, that's a free concert open to the public. You mentioned the spring conference that's held every, I think, April.
Right.
At the School of Music. Are you ready to reveal to this
Absolutely.
Year's guest?
Absolutely. We are very excited. On April 13, it's a Thursday. It's an all-day event, and we every year host a guest composer. And this year is Stephen Bryant. And for anybody in the band world, he's probably one of the biggest names of people writing for wind ensemble these days. He's a world-class composer, writing really wonderful music. And he just recently wrote a trombone concerto for Joe Alessi, who is the principal trombonist of the New York Philharmonic. And Joe's going to be here to play it. So Joe Alessi will be here to play Stephen Bryant's trombone concerto on April 13. And then the next evening, Joe and his accompanist will do a recital for everybody in Dalton Center Recital Hall on Friday evening, April 14. Very exciting.
Dr. Borma, thank you very much for previewing your concert on Sunday, and I hope it goes splendidly.
I'm sure it will. I think everybody that comes will enjoy it.